tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 19th of August, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, Rwanda has reared its head again. People will remember the Conservative Party had this plan that they were going to send illegal immigrants to Rwanda, and that would solve the problem of them coming into Britain. And the problem was, they promoted this as a deterrent. And they said, oh, it's going to be a deterrent because life is so horrible in Rwanda. And I argued at the time that this was the wrong way to promote it. They should be saying, this is not going to be horrible for them in Rwanda. It's going to be very good for them. They will have their own properties. They'll have their own place that they're living in. They will have healthcare. They will have their food provided. They will have their clothing provided. Rwanda itself wants people to come to Rwanda. It's keen to have economic migrants come to Rwanda. It will help them out with business loans. It will help them to build businesses. It means that the Rwandan people themselves are much closer ethnically and racially to the people that are coming over to Britain. So there are all these bonus points, effectively, really good reasons why Rwanda would be a good place to send these people to. But of course, the Conservative Party didn't do that. They said, oh, Rwanda's a terrible place, and this is a deterrent. And the way they should have packaged it as, well, this is going to be very good for them. It means that if they are economic migrants, they will get help to set up businesses. And Rwanda itself wants these people to come there. So there were all sorts of reasons why it would have been a very good choice. But because it was promoted as being horrible and being torture for the migrants to go to Rwanda, the left were furious about this, and the left-wing judges were furious about this. And it was very, very costly. I think it ended up costing billions of pounds. Britain even made a deal with Rwanda, and they gave them some money up front. And then when Britain was not allowed to actually send the refugees to Rwanda, Britain ended up having to pay compensation to Rwanda. After giving them the money to set up these community centres in the first place, which were really nice accommodation, not barracks like they're getting in Britain, but proper nice flats they would have had in Rwanda. These flats were actually built at cost to Britain, and then Britain had to pay compensation to Rwanda because Britain didn't send these migrants over there, and Rwanda was expecting them. Rwanda did want to have them. They said, we don't mind if they're asylum seekers fleeing from war, or if they're economic migrants, they want to set up businesses. We don't mind. We're quite happy to take these people. So it was a really good scheme, but the Conservative Party completely fluffed it right from the start. And of course, when the Labour Party came in, they put a stop to it and said, we're never going to do this again. So it is quite interesting now that the European Union is now talking about doing this and sending illegal immigrants to Rwanda. This article comes from Breitbart. The headline is EU member states begin talks with Rwanda over migrant return centres. Multiple European Union governments have begun talks with Rwanda to potentially open migrant return hubs in the African country, Kigali has revealed. This is interesting because the European Union is particularly left-wing. So what is surprising is that you actually have these other countries in the European Union that are requesting to do this. Of course, over here in Britain, we know the problems that our own government have been having. They're saying they're going to have to put these people in multiple occupancy housing, going to have to put them in army barracks. 80% of the British people are not happy about this. They think that the government should be doing something different. Well, they did have this plan to do something different, because of the way it was packaged, the left were against it. So now these European Union member states are actually for it. In the wake of the European Union Parliament paving the way for opening up migrant return centres in third world countries outside of the bloc to reduce the strain and disincentivise illegal immigration, Giorgia Meloni's Italy and other EU nations opened talks with Rwanda as a potential first location. And this is related to a month or so back, the European Union passed a law saying that they would be able to send illegal immigrants, asylum seekers, to a hub, a return hub that was actually outside of the European Union. And this was quite an interesting occurrence, because the people that were passing this vote all started shouting, send them back, send them back, send them back, in the European Union Parliament, which I never thought I would ever see mainstream politicians chanting, send them back, in the European Union Parliament. Of course, Macron said, well, we're never going to do this, even if this has been voted in. It just says that countries can do this. Doesn't mean that countries will actually do this. But it was quite clear that it was a majority of people in the European Union Parliament that actually supported doing this. And Rwanda is the most obvious choice, actually. That's why Britain was going to do it. The scheme was first put forward by the former Tory government in Britain, which previously inked a deal with Rwanda to house illegal migrants. However, the plan was delayed by years of legal wrangling with the European Court of Human Rights and ultimately scrapped before it could begin when the left-wing Labour Party came into power last year. And it's so sad, because it really would have been good for these migrants, I think. I think it would have been very good for them. Just think about it. They're coming from black Africa into white Britain, and think of the differences between the people. Or what's going to be better for them, coming to somewhere where the culture is completely different, like Britain, or going to another African country where the culture is going to be substantially similar and the people there are going to be substantially similar by ethnicity? And it's obvious which is going to be the best place for them. Yet because Rwanda has this image of these genocide that took place many years ago, people view it in a negative fashion. I think Rwanda don't want to be viewed in that fashion. That's why they want people to actually come there. So it would have served Rwanda well, and it would have served Britain well. And this deal here, it will serve Rwanda well, because they'll obviously get the investment from these European Union countries, and it will serve the European Union countries well, because they'll be able to send their illegal migrants there, and it will serve the illegal immigrants well, because they will get all the things that they are wanting to come to Europe for, and they'll actually be getting them on their own home continent, being provided by their own people, being among their own people. And it is always better to be amongst your own people. We're continually hearing about how black people need to have more representation of black people in various fields. They need to have more black teachers, more black judges, more black police. They need to have more black people on the television. It's because people like to be amongst their own people. White people need representation just as much as black people do. The reason why we have all these arguments about representation is because people should be living amongst their own people, and that's it. That's what happens naturally. If you look around the world, it's only white countries that are filled up with all these other races from all over the world. You don't get that in places like Japan or China, where they're 99% Japanese or 99% Chinese. It's the same in Africa. And that's the natural way, to live. Just as a bit of an aside here, but referring to a similar thing, I was watching a Japanese anime the other day, and there was this, I guess he was confused Japanese man, young man, and he was getting himself into trouble on the streets, and this other Japanese girl just picked him up and said, oh, you can come and stay at my house. And it just made me think, you would never see that in a multicultural country. It just wouldn't be seen as normal or possible. It would be seen as that's completely made up. Nobody would do that. Nobody would just pick somebody up off the street and allow them to live at their house. But quite clearly, that is the sort of thing that can happen in Japan. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in this Japanese anime. And I can remember reading a comic years ago about a Persian girl. I think it was called Persepolis, a Persian girl in Persia. And she hasn't got somewhere to live, and because of that, the police find her somewhere and they put her somewhere. And that's because Persia is all made up of Persians. Iran is made up of Iranians. It's not really very multicultural. So if you need help, your people will actually help you out because you're part of an extended family. Of course, in Britain, we don't have that. We have multiculturalism. So people don't help each other out. People don't even trust other white people because there are these other groups here. Once you have these other groups here, then there is a possibility that people from among your own group could be conspiring against you with members of the other group, which means that you're less likely to trust your own group as well as less likely to trust the outsiders as well. I mean, this is the reason why the Putnam study, the largest ever study on diversity, and it was called The Downside of Diversity, and that effectively showed that trust went down, not just amongst the outsider ethnic group and the insider ethnic group, but actually amongst the insider ethnic group as well. And that's the reason why, because you instinctively know that there is now another group there that members of your own group could be conspiring with. If that other group was not there, the possibility for conspiring with them would not be there. And the chances are that you would be more likely to trust members of your own group because there was nobody outside that group for them to conspire with. So clearly, I think if you're actually a black African from a black African country, you're going to be better off in another black African country just for that reason, because you're then going to have the representation that people naturally wish to have. According to a report from the European Union-funded Info Migrants news site, Rwandan government spokeswoman Yolande Makolo said that Kigali has already held some initial discussions with some European countries on the prospect of opening up migrant return hubs in her country. However, she noted that nothing has been decided as of yet. Of course, Kigali, I guess, is the capital city, and this is where they're going to be putting them as well. They're going to be putting them in the capital city. In Britain, they're now spreading them all around the country, and we know these people would much rather be in a city where they have all the facilities and all the amenities there. And in Rwanda, that's where they will be. They will be put in the capital city, which is where they want to be, effectively. Following the mass invasion of the Spanish North African territory of Ceuta late last month, Italy and Denmark have pressed for the European Union to urgently adopt and invest in a return hub strategy. And that will be a real turn up for the books if the European Union ends up actually doing this. After condemning Britain for wanting to do the same, for the European Union to end up doing so, I mean, that would be quite some poetic justice. In addition to Rwanda, Rome has suggested partnering with countries such as Ethiopia, Ghana, Mauritania, Senegal or Uganda in Africa, or even Montenegro and Uzbekistan in Central Asia to open migrant holding centres. Again, this can only be a good thing. You look at places like Ghana, Mauritania, Senegal, Ethiopia. Do they need investment? Will investment in their countries help them? Of course it will help them. It means that they'd get a lot of money from the European Union. It means that they could put that money towards developing their own country. Plus, the people that would be going there, a lot of them would be economic migrants. As we're told, these people are just looking for a better life. They're looking to work. They want jobs. They want to make money. They want a chance to work. Well, that's going to be a benefit, isn't it, to places like Ethiopia, Ghana, Mauritania, Senegal. If they have the people there that have enough get up and go, people that have actually left their own countries because they want to go somewhere and work. So it's clearly going to be a benefit to them, not just with the investment in the money from the European Union, but also with the human resources that they would have there, the increased number of economic migrants looking for work. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has shown some success in negotiating migrant deals with African governments and is seeking to build on that success as she heads into a contentious re-election campaign next year. However, despite the apparent willingness of African governments to make a deal to open up migrant return centres, which would likely come with some financial or trade consideration in return, and that's the important bit, there have been two notable holdouts in Europe to the idea: the socialist government of Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez in Spain and the neoliberal government of President Emmanuel Macron in France. Now, when we covered the news story about this in the European Union. It was Macron that said, well, this law might be passed, but we don't have to use it. We're not going to be sending anybody back. And of course, Pedro Sanchez, he's the one that seems to prefer illegal immigrants to white migrants. He sends back white Russians. He kicks them out of the country at the same time as giving citizenship to illegal immigrants with criminal records. I mean, a large number of the people that he naturalized, that he made into Spanish citizens, actually had criminal records. So they were kicking out people that had set up businesses and done everything legally, and making into citizens people that had broken into the country and had actually carried out a lot of crimes. So it doesn't surprise me that Pedro Sanchez is actually against this. Macron has even said that he would look to block European Union funds from being directed to any such project. And that's really nasty, isn't it? Because those funds, as I say, those funds would actually help those countries out. You can imagine that they would ask for a lot of money for this. They would get that money. They would invest that in the country, and it would be a big benefit to them. Macron argued that migrant return hubs go against the ethics of Europe, and that it would make the EU look bad in Africa if they were seen caring more about illegal immigration into their countries rather than human trafficking in Africa. Well, again, that's just the way that you look at it. I don't think it would make the EU look bad. I think it would make the EU look good, because it would be sending all these funds to these African countries saying, look, we'll send you this money. You can improve your country. You can develop your country with this money. And in return, we expect you to accept these other Africans who are likely looking for work. They're most likely to be economic migrants. If they're not economic migrants, they're people that are looking for asylum. In each case, it means that Africa's helping out other Africans. And it's not going to make the EU look bad. I mean, why should the EU accept these people from Africa anyway, in the first place? They're not part of Europe. They're part of Africa. It's not going to make the European look bad to be saying to African countries, would you like to have these other Africans here? We will pay you to develop your country. Plus, these other Africans are most likely looking for work. They want work. So you can use those investment funds to set up work for them, which will just increase the wealth of the country. I think it's a win-win situation, this. Yet with anti-mass migration parties leading in both the upcoming elections in France and Spain, it remains to be seen how long the opposition from Madrid and Paris will last. Well, of course, the problem is you may have a majority of support in France for anti-immigration parties, but because of the way the electoral system is run there, they always seem to be able to keep Marine Le Pen out from winning. They end up building these coalitions between these other leftist groups, and sometimes left-wing groups and right-wing groups, just in order to keep the Nationalist Party out. And they do the same thing in Germany in order to keep the Alternative for Deutschland out. You know, they have the majority of people's support, yet the way that these elections are fixed by these left-wing parties, they prevent the right-wing parties from actually getting into power. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, which attempted to pioneer such a migrant return hub scheme, Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has opened up talks with Nayib Bukele's government in El Salvador to send foreign criminals to jails in El Salvador should his party come to power in London at the next general election. Now, that's a good policy to have, because if you have these foreign criminals, and we do have a lot of foreign criminals in Britain. I'm not quite sure what the percentage is. I think it might be 10% of prisoners in Britain are foreign criminals. Well, you could say, well, we want to send them back to their own countries. And then there comes the problem of, oh, have they carried out a sexual assault? Well, if they carried out a sexual assault, they could be hanged for that if they go back to Egypt or Afghanistan or Pakistan. So we can't actually send these foreign criminals back to their country of origin, because the country of origin either will say, no, we don't want them, or the country of origin will end up having to execute them for their crimes. So we can't do that. So if we have a similar return hub like this Rwanda plan, but it's actually a prison in El Salvador, then that would be a good idea. We could just send them to prison in El Salvador instead of saying, well, we want to send this prisoner back to Pakistan so that he does the rest of his 10 years in a Pakistani jail. Oh, we can't do that because Pakistan will execute him. Well, we'll send him to an El Salvador jail where they won't execute him. And that frees up these prison places in Britain. I think this is a good idea. For foreign criminals, of course, I don't think it's a good idea to do it for Indigenous Britons. I mean, one of the ideas that they were putting out recently was that they would outsource prisoners to places like Estonia, and they would hire a prison place in one of Estonia's prisons, and they would put people there. But of course, then you've got the problem of how are people going to visit them? And you need to have visitors. I mean, they've shown that if people that keep up their family and friend connections are less likely to reoffend. So it's a necessary part of rehabilitation that you have friends and family that are able to access you, that are able to visit you. And of course, if you've been put in a jail in another country, there's going to be a lot of difficulty in doing that. Of course, they might offer incentives. They could say, well, we'll increase your spending money if you go to one of these other jails. I mean, that would solve the problem as well. But then, of course, you'd still have this problem with the rehabilitation. Even if the prisoner was quite happy to go to Estonia because he thought he would get more spending money in his canteen, it would also mean that he would have less contact with family and friends and therefore be more likely to commit crime when he comes out. So I don't think it's a good idea to do it for the Indigenous people, but it's certainly a good idea to suggest doing it for foreign criminals. Mr. Farage, who expressed a doubt over the Rwandan scheme of the Tory party due to Britain's continued membership within the European Convention on Human Rights, prescient given the ECHR's role in dooming the plan, has also vowed to withdraw from the convention and to deploy the Royal Navy to push back migrants to the beaches of France. Well, it's a good idea that they pull out of that ECHR, but how long will it take to actually do that? And I certainly don't think they'll be able to just push the migrants back to the beaches of France. I do think the best idea here is this Rwanda idea. I mean, it's a benefit to Rwanda, it's a benefit to the illegal immigrants, and it's of benefit to Britain or these European countries as well. It's a very obviously good plan to make. But it always gets sold in the wrong way. It gets packaged up as if this is going to be a deterrent. This is going to stop these migrants from coming. And if you put it that way, then you're instantly going to be getting the left wing against you. You're making enemies out of them, aren't you? Because you're saying you're not going to be treating these men in a good way. You're going to try and do something to them which is going to deter them from wanting to go on their journey. Whereas you should just be saying, well, this is a benefit to them and it's a benefit to us. Well, I have another news story here, which is related to a different subject. This is related to a black man by the name of Simon Levy, who, though he was arrested for sexual assault, was not remanded. He was allowed to stay on Britain's streets, and he carried on raping, and he carried on killing, and they don't know how many rapes he may have got away with while he was still on the streets. And this has caused a massive scandal. And we now have the Director of Public Prosecutions, which has been forced to apologise for this. I mean, what could it have been? Why did these police continually not remand this black person? Well, probably because he was black. Also because the prisons are full, but most likely because he was black and because the police and the judges and the courts, they've been told that they have to get the number of black people down in prisons because it's disproportionate. And what's the only way they can do that? Well, it's just don't put black people in prison, even when they commit these crimes. And this is the reason why David Lammy was saying, well, we shouldn't put young black criminals in prison at all, because it means they're more likely to carry on committing crime. That's the sort of ridiculous logic that we see with the establishment here. Now, Mark Collette did a Substack article on this Simon Levy. He did a deep dive on it, went into deep details about what actually went on. So we're not going to do that today. We're just going to have a look at what the Director of Public Prosecutions has said about the case. And we're using the Daily Mail for our source here. The head of the Crown Prosecution Service finally apologised today, and this is actually on the 14th that this came out, for failing to put predator Simon Levy behind bars, leaving him free on bail to kill two women and rape a third. Stephen Parkinson said he was deeply sorry after the 40-year-old was repeatedly bailed by police and the courts despite being accused of multiple sex attacks. And just think about that and contrast that. Cast your mind back to the Southport riots. after Axel Rudakibana brutally murdered three young girls and maimed many others. And people went out on the streets and they protested about this because they were sick and tired of this sort of thing happening. People of migrant heritage murdering white people, in this case, white children. And the government's response, Keir Starmer's response, he was Prime Minister at the time. Don't forget that he used to be the head of the Crown Prosecution Service, just like this Stephen Parkinson was. Keir Starmer's response was to have fast-track justice. And everybody that they could find that were involved in these protests was remanded and stuck in jail straight away. So if you went out and protested against little girls being murdered by a young man of migrant heritage, you get put in jail straight away. If you have been caught raping, sexually assaulting, and he hadn't actually murdered at this point, but he had been found raping and sexually assaulting, the police will just allow you to continue roaming on the streets. I mean, what this says is that the government's priority is to lock people up for complaining about government policy, and that is more important to them than locking up black sex attackers to keep the streets safe. It's more important that they prevent people from complaining about things. In a string of blunders, and I would say, was it blunders? Was it blunders, or was it actually just going along with the guidance that they've been given about reducing the number of black people in prison? In a string of blunders, prosecutors failed to inform the courts that the convicted sex offender was being investigated for the murder of Carmenza Valencia Trujillo and had a history of preying on women, resulting in him being released from custody to kill again, despite being charged with a raft of sex offences on the tube. So he had actually been investigated for murder, and he was still let out on the streets. So even being wanted for murder and rape is less important than being wanted for complaining about migrant crime. Prosecutors failed to oppose bail even though detectives had warned them. He's considered by police to be a danger to the public and at high risk of reoffending. Police have significant concerns that if granted bail, Levy will continue in his perpetual offending against female members of the public. So detectives even warned them, but the prosecutors did not oppose bail. Why did they not oppose bail? Well, I would suggest because they've been told they need to reduce the numbers of black people in prison. This wasn't a mistake. This wasn't a blunder, not in my eyes. Last year, while he was out on bail, Levy murdered Miss Valencia Trujillo, 53, before killing Cheryl Wilkins, 39, months later. He also nearly killed a third woman, suffocating her during a brutal rape, and he carried out six further sex attacks on the London Underground. Police now believe he could have been carrying out daily attacks for years, escalating from groping women on the London Underground to rape, suffocation, and eventually murder. Amidst mounting anger at how police and prosecutors missed a monster in their midst, a blame game erupted today as Scotland Yard Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley lashed out, saying there is no one from the court service, no one from CPS, no one from probation stepping forward and talking about their failures. Well, I will talk about their failures because it wasn't just one department. As he points out here, it was the court service, the CPS, probation and the police as well. Clearly, this cannot be just one person making a mistake, can it? It's got to be advice that they've been given. It's got to be guidance that they've been given, that they are to reduce the number of black people in prison. I mean, that's got to be the answer to it. You can't have four different departments all doing the same thing and saying, oh, it was just a blunder in each department. And the chances of that just being a coincidence are very, very low. And what we know about the police with the police action plan, race action plan, same sort of thing going on elsewhere. It's going to be likely that the same thing was going on with the Crown Prosecution Service. In fact, we know the same thing is going on with the Crown Prosecution Service. I did a podcast a couple of years back that was saying that these judges need to bear in mind that the number of black people in prison is disproportionate, and that the person in the dock might have suffered from racism when they were younger, and that the judge should can use that as a reason for being more lenient on the sentencing. So we know that They want to get these disproportionate numbers of black people down in prison. And I would suggest that this is the reason why this rapist murderer was not remanded, because he was black. That's the reason why he wasn't remanded, because he was black. And they want to get the numbers of black people down in prison. So Mark told the BBC's Today programme, the reason we are really worried and concerned by what is going on here is we are the ones who see victims day in and day out. We had a case the other day of a sex offender who should have been remanded in custody, bailed to an address two doors down from his victim. These things are happening routinely, and it really worries us because we are close to those victims. And I say that the other reason for this is the fact that the prisons are full. Not just that it's black people that this is happening to. I'm sure it is also happening to white people because the prisons are full. But it will be more likely to happen for black people simply because they're black and they need to get the number of black people in prison down. He said his officers regularly handle cases of prolific knife offenders who are repeatedly charged with carrying the weapons and sometimes using them, but they are being bailed back onto the streets. Knife offenders, knife attacks is predominantly a black crime. Disproportionately, it's used by black people. So again, could that be the reason why these young prolific knife offenders, and they're saying prolific here, so they've been done a number of times, is the fact that they are being bailed back onto the streets? Could that be because they're black again, because they want to reduce the numbers of black people in prison and in the criminal justice system? It is harder and harder to get these cases through the courts. We've got cases in London, assaulting emergency worker cases, domestic violence, strangulation cases being listed for 2029, 2030. And those risks are carried in the community, Sir Mark added. So, and this is really lifting the lid off a can of worms, isn't it? Imagine if you've been done for domestic, you've been charged with domestic violence, strangulation. You're not going to be in court for another 4 years. And you're not actually remanded in jail for that. That means that the person that could allegedly have carried that out is on the streets. But the Director of Public Prosecutions hit back, saying different parts of the justice system should stop taking shots at each other. Yeah, I agree with that. What they should be doing is pointing to the diversity guidance that they have been given and saying, look, each one of us was given this guidance. And that is why each one of these departments is making the same mistake, is because we've all been given the same guidance. Mr. Parkinson said, I don't think this is good for public confidence. He went on, I think the Metropolitan Police Commissioner is absolutely right to recognise that there have been failures across the criminal justice system, and we are responsible for part of that. So I do want to acknowledge our failures and apologise. I am deeply sorry. I think I would like to add, though, that this is a failure which was rare. Well, we've just been told that it isn't rare. We've just been told that the same thing happens with knife attackers. He said it is an exceptional but tragic and appalling instance where something did go wrong, but I wouldn't want people to lose faith in the criminal justice system. After Levy's conviction last week, the police watchdog announced two police officers were being investigated for misconduct. But again, that doesn't explain the Crown Prosecution Service and all these other departments that were responsible for this. Because we did hear that the detective said, look, this person is wanted for murder. And yet the prosecutors did not ask for him to be remanded. Mr. Parkinson refused to say how many Crown Prosecution Service staff have faced disciplinary action. British Transport Police, which also repeatedly bailed Levy, despite him being accused of multiple sex offences, has refused to refer itself to the watchdog. Levy is now serving a whole life sentence for the rape and two murders. He has also been convicted of 13 sexual assaults between 2018 and 2025. Sir Mark believes the prison service is also culpable after Levy was released from prison on licence in February 2023, despite sexually assaulting a guard while behind bars for two sex attacks. The Met Commissioner said the prison service should not have released somebody who is indecently assaulting its staff. Again, the prisons are full up, plus this sexual assaultist, rapist, murderer, he was also black. Sir Mark also criticised the probation service for failing to monitor the partially blind offender. So he's disabled as well, so he can say, well, he's black, he's also disabled, we have to let him out. The probation service failed to monitor the partially blind offender while he ventured on the tube for prey, sexually assaulting women at peak times when he knew carriages would be packed. Levy's chilling fascination with rape and murder went unnoticed by probation and police, who were supposed to be monitoring the registered sex offender. Yet he managed to secretly amass a huge collection of newspaper stories about notorious offenders he lionized, like black cab rapist John Warboys, pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, and Harvey Weinstein. Today, Sir Mark warned other dangerous offenders are slipping through the net. He said nothing happens when offenders are arrested for breaching their electronic tags, so it becomes a pointless endeavor if it is zero jeopardy. And again, I would say that's probably black people. If black people break the tag, or they probably have more leeway with them because they're black. They'll probably say, well, they're more likely to break their bail conditions, and if we put them in prison, it means we'll have a disproportionate number of black people in prison, so we'll just overlook this one. And I can definitely see that happening. There are currently 10,800 registered sex offenders in London, and the number grows by 100 every 3 months. Mr. Parkinson said, "I understand why this shocking case has caused such deep concern. It has shaken confidence in the way the criminal justice system protects women and girls, and I recognise the pain and anger that will be felt by victims' families and the wider public." Well, this shocking case causes such deep concern, but it's actually related to the same case of Jason Arda, isn't it? He was put in that position because he was black. And this Simon Levy, he was put in the position of not being remanded because he was black. And this goes throughout the whole of society, this promotion of diversity and this obsession with equality. The criminal justice system failed to stop Simon Levy, and although we recognise it is under significant pressure, it cannot be allowed to fail again. No single agency can fix that alone. The public rightly expects police, prosecutors and courts to work together, share information properly, identify risk quickly and act decisively when women and girls may be in danger. No mention here of this this promotion of diversity and getting the number of black people in prison down, getting those numbers down. No mention of that at all. The public do not want to see different parts of the system blaming each other. I want victims to know that we have listened, that we are making changes, and that we will keep working to improve the way these cases are handled. And I have to just finish off by saying the fact that you do have these different parts of the system that all failed, it implies that it wasn't just somebody making a blunder in each one of these departments. It implies that they had some kind of guidance that they were going by that resulted in this. And that's why British Transport Police are not investigating themselves, because they can see that they actually carried out the advice. And the advice would have been that they need to get down, they need to reduce the numbers of black people that are on remand and in prison, because they are disproportionate to their percentage of the population. That would be the reason why this man was allowed out on the streets. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, God bless and hail victory.